Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Aloha and aloha. Those are the two words. Sorry, go ahead.
There's a pronouncement there. Mr. Justin Robert Young.
Maloha. That's another third word.
And our super producer extraordinaire, Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Taloha, everybody.
Gentlemen, sorry to announce it's our last broadcast.
Whoa. Oh, goodness. It's been a hell of a run. I assume that we're about to be exploded by the sun. That's the only reason I can imagine this show stops.
No, not the sun, Brian. Not the sun.
Oh, the moon?
No, not the moon, Brian.
The stars or the sky itself?
It might be the sky. It might be the sky or something in the skies.
Yeah. Who's got two thumbs and is about to explode? The sky.
Yeah, no. Well, we don't know the truth. Why explode? But, man. I think the end times is when some guy in North Carolina takes a couple photos of a UFO. You know, I mean, that's kind of it, right? And there's been a couple UFO sightings there, so.
This doesn't sound like the most unusual thing. We've seen a lot of UFO photos here on the show.
Yeah, but now's now, Brian.
Oh, now it's for reals.
So apparently they have another alleged UFO sighting near Charlotte has appeared on Facebook. I mean, that's where we'll find out about, you know, the end times, by the way, too, is Facebook. It was posted by husband and father who says he doesn't necessarily believe in UFOs. What a way to hedge your bets. I'm not saying what I saw is a UFO, but what do you guys think?
Yeah, exactly. See, normally I swear to God, I never do this on the first Facebook posting.
Yeah. So the quick side journey. Do you remember? I don't know if you followed any of the press junkets that Steven Spielberg did when he did the remake of War of the Worlds. But you remember he did Close Encounters of the Third Kind in the late 70s. And then he did War of the Worlds in the early 2000s. And his attitude on the viability of whether or not it was UFOs had changed sharply. And specifically, I thought his rationale was interesting because he said back in the 1970s, there were lots of what seemed to be credible UFO flying saucer photos. Then everybody suddenly has camera phones now. So the number of cameras has gone up exponentially. So you would think that if aliens were regularly visiting us, that there would be any increase in the number of UFO photos. And instead, there's absolutely not. Therefore, it's highly unlikely that we are continuing to be visited by aliens. And despite the fact that we have 10 times the number of cameras available at all times, no significant increase in the number of crazy photos.
And also that they're all so much higher quality.
Yes.
That anything that is caught is always just a fuzzy blue dot in the distance or some kind of formation.
Yeah.
Let me offer an alternative explanation. Let's say that we were being observed and visited. And with the increase in the availability of camera phones and camera sensors and all this, also comes an increase in the ability of military technology, sensing technology, all these sorts of things. So the ability of our government to see or to detect what's out there and to deploy countermeasures, aircraft, missiles, things like that, has increased. So perhaps these visitors have decided to keep back. Like if we were trying to observe the Russians and the Russians increase their satellite defense technology, then we would fly higher or use better measures. You know, we've improved our planes, new stealth technologies. Have you not considered this, gentlemen?
That's actually not bad. That's a fun scenario to think of. Unfortunately, it allows for an alien race that's so sophisticated that they have intergalactic travel and yet so unsophisticated that they don't think how these primates might be capturing photos with just light.
You're making a lot of assumptions there about who these people are. And I recall, Brian, remember when we went to go do an audition for a channel, for a show, and I walked in on a discussion about UFOs. This is my favorite thinking.
I'm going to give a little backstory. This is one of those shows. They called it a chemistry test. They gathered 30 interesting people that they thought might be hosts. It was the weirdest American Idol ever because they were looking for, get ready, a skeptic and a believer to host a show for a network. And so I think that was one of the very first times we ever connected face-to-face, right?
Maybe.
Under the microscope. Like, somewhere is footage of one of the very first times Andrew and I ever hung out.
It was after Weird Things started, though.
Well after Weird Things, yeah. So I walk in into the discussion, and there's this – the topic is, like, UFOs. Like, what's the explanation for UFOs? I'm like – I walk over to this, like, little living room suite area. I sit over on the couch. I'm like leaning in on the conversation. And somebody says, well, you know, aliens. And somebody says, yeah, well, you know, they could be, you know, interdimensional travelers. Yeah, that could be. Well, somebody says, you know, I think they could be like, you know, kind of like spirit ghost, you know, projection sort of thing. Like, yeah. And then somebody else goes, you guys are ignoring one other possibility here. And I'm like, finally, another skeptic starting to explain this, you know, that it's maybe none of the above. And he goes, and I'm like, just tell them. And he goes, time travelers.
I mean, he's not wrong.
If you're gonna, well, actually, put your back into it. That's the best well actually of all time.
Fast forward a couple years. I'm at Salt Lake City Comic Con. I'm on a Bigfoot panel. And they're talking about explanations for Bigfoot. And they go, you know, well, you know, it could be, you know, like, I don't think it's a creature. Like, yeah, I think it's some sort of spirit sort of thing, interdimensional traveler, this, whatever. And I'm like, can I suggest a hypothesis?
Oh, that's great. You pinched their reason. That's amazing.
Oh, no, I did. I'm like, may I suggest maybe just not real?
How did that go over?
Like, no. That I'm like, you won't even consider that. Like, no, I have too much personal experience. I'm like, you know, somebody who hallucinates would say the same thing, you know, and that was sort of like kind of the birth, you know, the genesis of my idea. If you will not even consider an alternative point of view, if you're just so resistant to the idea of an alternative explanation,
yeah,
then you're not a rational person. Came from one working for the James Randi Foundation and dealing with crazy. I'm like, what sets crazy people apart? I realized every person I spoke to who was crazy said absolutely nothing could convince them otherwise. They were said, I'm immune to any sort of, immune to any alternative points of view.
That really is sort of a gateway question where it's like, before we even engage, is there literally, can you conceive of something I could say, do, show, or, show you a photograph or give you evidence or tell you a sufficient story? Can you even conceive of something like that that would cause you to, elevate your understanding of the situation and decide you were previously wrong? And often I feel like people, as a badge of pride, be like, nothing will. In which case it's like, all right, and we're done, because I'm pretty sure you could open up a door and show me a living Sasquatch who chuffs and waves and walks over and lets me smell him and then lets me take him to the university, and then the scientists figure out, this is definitely a species we've never seen before. Like, at that point, I'm convinced and we're done. So I can be convinced.
If you had Bigfoot pop out of the box like that gender reveal meme from over the weekend, Bryce, see if you can bring it up. I would believe in Bigfoot 100% if you brought me out to a field and there is a big box, and then all of a sudden popping out of it was just a gigantic cryptid that we've seen, the famous loping
archetype.
Strike. In fact, he did that. Yeah, if this was Bigfoot, Bigfoot just came out.
Yeah, I'm convinced. Discussion's over. You win.
Yeah, I'd be like, no. You want to know what? Hey, sorry. Just trying to play it safe here. Let me spray some beer on you.
That's amazing.
Wait, he does the Fortnite dance in like a minute.
Oh, that's great. Which
I'm watching a giant inflatable baby costume burst out of a box. To reveal and do a dance, and then now it's getting spanked. This is really uncomfortable. Apparently, it's a thing now.
People taking gender reveal parties to just new heights.
It's like you get the teaser trailer, the trailer.
Oh, that's amazing.
That's great. That's great.
In the chat, they're saying actual Bigfoot sighting, 1964, colorized.
Yeah.
So, all right. The North Carolina, there's a Facebook posting about a UFO sighting. Is this is a pattern now out there?
It's like it's pretty pattern. I sent Bryce. I've not watched this yet. I figured we'd do a live weird things investigation.
That's a good point.
These are photos, I believe. I don't know that these are videos. These are just photos.
There was a video on the page I sent you, Bryce. I don't know what's the video. Right?
Well, that is an unrelated video. About
yeah, no, but let's just watch that unrelated video. That'll be fun. Let's live go to the news of whatever videos.
So here's one of the photos that was posted to Facebook.
Oh, wow. All right. So this is, if I'm going to describe to the audio listener, the thing that is interesting about it is that it does seem like a ridge, right? It seems like an edge of something that curves.
This is so interesting because I can say some words and cause you to see this totally different instantly.
Okay.
Because right now, would you say whether it is or is not, like if somebody told you that's a UFO, you would accept that, right?
What I would say distinguishes it is normally a UFO is either a big blurry orb or like a series of orbs that you would imagine is like the underside or like the way that we think of a plane, right? This is more in a classic kind of a flat disc thing. And the coloring is like a light purple, giving it a very fashionable sci-fi, like a Blade Runner kind of look to it. But Brian, so I would say this looks more like a rounded edge or even an angular, cooler looking. This looks like a very cool modern UFO if I'm going to fill in the rest of the details with my brain.
So the context clues I am seeing is that you can see the hood of a car on the bottom part of the photo, which means this is from the perspective of a driver, in which case looking up, you okay. It is a car radio display being reflected from the windshield on there. Zoom in on that and you will see the time displayed. You will see the rounded edges of the two sides of the knobs on the left and on the right, and a LCD display in the middle. That is just straight up a car stereo system being reflected. The lights right underneath. It says it's 8:11 p.m.
I'll tell you what.
But it wouldn't flip it horizontally.
It's 1:18. It's 1:18 a.m.
I'm totally.
Would it be reversed then?
Yeah, it's reversed vertically. It's 1:18. So it's being flipped up end over end.
So to me totally looks like interior reflection. Totally agree, interior reflection. The as far as I understand what you're saying, how it could fit that, I'm confused by how it would get at that angle. I don't know that. But I mean, to me, I'm like, we're looking at something likely reflected from the interior of the cabin.
We have another photo.
I'm hesitant to say what though. I look at it, I'm like, if I held up my iPhone and I got the metal chrome edge to reflect against the window, could it look like that? And I was actually looking at my iPhone, I'm like, those would be things I'd test for.
So we have another photo here from the same Facebook post.
Oh, that does look different.
Yeah.
Now that undoes my theory that it was all that one same thing.
Aha! Another skeptic destroyed by the no words. Post this on r/UFOs for real.
I mean, to me, it has the dimensions of like a phone, like an iPhone or an Android or something. It could be like the reflection of like, you know, the metal.
Yeah, I would say, a lot of modern cars have like a stock kind of track lighting that may or may not be reflecting.
That
like
does look like a cell phone, though, man. It does look very rectangular. And plus, what we're seeing is a version of the Pepper's Ghost illusion, right? We have you have a lit thing being reflected by a transparent, clear glass that makes it ethereally project out into a far space.
And you could have, too, remember, you could have the visor with a mirror. Like, that could actually, like some visors have like my Tesla has like a light inside of it. Yeah. So if you had a visor with the light on and you pulled the visor to the side,
yeah,
you got a glow coming from in there.
Or so, even if you covered up like the normal, just the normal inside light, if you covered up the main part and there was light leaking through, maybe it's an old unit.
It just, but Bryce, the problem is like just the angle of that, trying to figure out how, why it would be angled in a weird way like that. But the, you know, the, so here we are, we're like, well, before we start saying it's something outside the car, we're all thinking of all these things on the inside because it seems more consistent with that, particularly like the first photo. You see right through the object, you know, you see clouds behind it, which just means it's lights, which is against glass. And that's one of the things, too, is that I think it's a great test of how people look at things. Some people look at this and they see the photograph. What's the photograph? We see it and we go, well, there's a car. There's glass. There's all the light inside of the car and the glass. Then there's the sky. Then there's whatever, you know, and then the assumption of where the object is.
Yeah. By the way, why does the UFO get snagging all the headlines when clearly the star of the show are these mysterious orbs down at the bottom?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, these orbs just flying around these other cars.
On the road where I drive?
Yeah. That's crazy. You should be really upset.
Yeah, Bryce, just so you know, that link I sent you, there is a video in there of another object in the sky.
And by the way, that's half of them are red and half of them are white. This is the travel of souls from to heaven and hell.
Well, that was always funny as you'd hear these descriptions of like old UFO sightings. Oh, we saw the string of lights in the sky and no one's flashing. And there was like a red and a green, like airplane navigation lights.
Yeah.
No. It wasn't that like that. You know, that's what they do. They have a flashing light there and they have this light over here and a light over here. Like no airplane. It wasn't an airplane. It's like, okay, I'm just saying that, you know, if you ever watch and just didn't move, it's like not airplanes move from left to right of your field of vision. Some come towards you. Some
Which, go by the way, I will vouch for the illusion of an airplane looking like a UFO when it's headed straight towards you.
Oh,
because,
yeah.
Because looking straight on, you've got the wings look like the sides of the flying saucer. The fuselage in the middle looks like that prototypical bulbous thing at the end.
I do think that there is... And this is kind of gets to the heart. This is like the canonical weird things point is that the fault for us, if there is one, is never in wanting to believe or being sucked in by the moment. Because I think that we are all we embrace the idea that, hey, look, in that moment when you look up in the sky and see something weird, it is not only is it something that we can all understand, but it's seductive. It's fun. Like that is kind of why we do this show, is that we want it to be real. In fact, our next steps are all about making sure we don't fall for fool's gold, that the one day that we do look up in the sky and see a UFO, the one day that Bigfoot does run out of the gender reveal box and makes himself known to humankind, that we know for sure that we have seen the genuine article.
What's interesting too is, Brian, you brought up Close Encounters, and a friend of mine, Paul Hynek, his father was the Hynek who put together the whole report for the Project Blue Book.
Oh, wow.
And there's actually a J. Allen Hynek, and he does a cameo in Close Encounters, whatnot. There's actually a movie coming out about our TV series, I think, on A&E about that, about the whole like that. And I've talked to Paul a little bit about this because, you know, that and, you know, what his father's beliefs were and what Paul's beliefs are. And you know, his theory, he says there's so much evidence of something strange and whatever going on. And the Air Force just wanted to be able to sort of just say, hey, you know, there's nothing there. We've solved it, whatever kind of thing. And I'm the skeptic and I'm like, all right, you know, but it is interesting when you talk to somebody who is very convinced and was in a position to observe something interesting. I talked to a guy who flew chase planes for SR-71s, and this guy talked about, you know, intercepts at high altitudes and stuff and all this, and it's compelling stuff. And then I talk to somebody like James Oberg or somebody who's an expert in investigating these things, and they give you a very good, well, here's the problem. They couldn't visually see this. They're going upon radar or whatever, and if they were trying to respond to, let's say, a high altitude weather balloon at this altitude, you know, which are real, a real thing, you know, they wouldn't necessarily know, you know, how the distance was. And, you know, those things can move, you know, you get things too, like those things can move faster than planes because they're in a much higher altitude stuff. You just get all these other things. As you go, like, you have one set of facts, like, wow, this is crazy. I have no explanation for it. And somebody else says, well, you know, objects in the stratosphere move faster because of blank and there's this. You're like, oh, I didn't know that. And then it's like, so I'm really not prepared to come to any conclusions about any of this. Well,
plus, also, keep in mind that there's no divorcing the height of the UFO phenomenon from the height of the Cold War. And that is a time where disinformation was a very, yep, very valuable tool. And if some people organically seem to think that the United States may have captured an alien spacecraft and have supernatural gifts. Yeah, along the way, you know, of course, they're doing all this crazy stuff, like they're throwing dummies out of planes at 30,000 feet just to see what happens. And some of them they are not going to find. Other people are going to stumble across it. But it seems like the strongest military tactical take would be like, good, let everybody think that we definitely have captured an alien spacecraft and we're definitely harvesting all of these amazing future technologies that will defeat the Russians.
And also beyond that, we definitely have literally no comment on anything that we are doing that in any way would give us, you know, give away what we are working on or what we're doing. Or,
well, that goes, you know, back to Roswell, which, you know, Project Mogul, about the balloon train, you know, which was at the time, you know, like, hey, UFO, Air Force, like, yeah, flying saucers, sounds great. What else? Like, what was, like, 1949 or whatever when that came out? And it was this sort of like the Air Force seemed to be tacit and saying, oh, yeah, it's UFO. Then nobody said anything about it. And that just fueled so many conspiracy theories to this day about Roswell. Later on, Freedom Information Act, looking back into it, we find out that what we had was there was a government project to use this high-tech material, Mylar, to build balloons with microphones to put them high up in the atmosphere to listen in on atomic explosions in Russia, because at that altitude you get this convection layer in which sounds travel really, really far around the world. And this was a listening technology pre-satellite, and it made a lot of sense. And so does the Air Force, does the military want to say, hey, we've developed the capability to listen to your explosions? Or like, sure, that's it. Anything is better than the truth.
Plus, also, Mylar was a new polymer technology in the 1940s. And so imagine if somebody described Mylar who's never seen it. It's like, it was this weird, super lightweight, malleable, metal-like. It had a shine that I've never seen from anything but metal, but it wasn't metal. In my hands, it folded and crinkled and sparkled in the sun. Like that sounds like crazy future alien technology.
What drives me crazy is like, man, after I saw the Falcon Heavy launch, I'm sitting there out there in the lawn, and there's this guy sitting like, no, 5 feet in front of me, explaining to some woman how we got all this alien technology and when and where we got the alien technology, right? And I'm just like, I'm not gonna say anything. But this guy is the biggest idiot in the world. He's confident, like, oh, you know, the microchip came here and da 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 da. And I was, you know, I kind of wonder, like, so did the aliens plant the patent for using semiconductors for processing in 1932? Is that part of their plan too? You're thinking about plasma touchscreens.
They went back and backdated all these precursor technologies. So they each make a significant but not extraordinary leap forward as they at exactly like the pace you would expect for humans to have innovations.
Yeah, you know, we got the microchip here and all that. So like we just invented the theorists that didn't really exist. Von Neumann, not a real guy. These other guys, I mean, like, it is like, and it's just frustrating because it's like you literally read a conspiracy theory on this, and this is all you even know about microchips. It's all you even know about any of this stuff, whatever. You know nothing, and you're less than nothing because you'd even know the source of what you read this. It just kind of like, but I didn't say anything. But I watched this guy just sort of explain. And it's like, that's why they don't want to cure anything, you know? It's like, well, they can't cure cancer. There are thousands of kinds of cancer. It's probably kind of tricky. And you think a pharmaceutical company would rather go out of business than, I don't know, sell the cure? You know, it's like
those conspiracy theories always tend to age poorly too, right? Because at some point you have to peg where the aliens gave us the thing that changed everything, which tends to kind of shift over time, right? Because like, why the microchip and not, you know, like you said, like the semiconductor or the you know, electricity or the battery or whatever, right? Like,
well, and then plus
the
also
jar.
There's that. Yeah, there you go. So this is a shot from Roswell of what looks like, I would imagine in the 1940s, a fairly extraordinary material that they had not seen before.
Dude, Mylar's still red. Yeah, there's a hot take for you. Mylar's still red.
In many ways, Mylar never left.
Hey, you want to know what else never left? Your ability to support this high quality show by going over to patreon.com/weirdthings. That is where you can go ahead and kick us a few bucks. Keep us rocking and rolling. Tell you what, this is a busy crew. We're all over the place. We're flying hither and yon. We took a day off for Labor Day, but that is a rarity around these parts because we keep it rolling no matter what we have on our schedule, and that's because of you guys.
I don't want to ladle on any guilt or whatever, but there's a threshold that we just dip a little bit below. Can we just get up $9 per episode? Is that too much? If you're somebody out there who's like, I've enjoyed this stuff, you could be one of the nine people, or you could be the one person, Daddy Warbucks with $9, that loves the episodes.
Yeah. Come on in. The water's fine. Patreon.com/weirdthings.
If there's something more we can do, let us know. Yeah. Anything.
That's right. Yeah. Guess what? You get to be the boss of us. You get to tell us what you want, and we have to do it because we work for you.
Well, I think one half of that is true.
So, you know, it doesn't pay to be a romantic. It just doesn't.
I think Hollywood would disagree.
Well, Brian, I think that romance, some people say it's dead, and perhaps I blame the courts, I blame society, I blame, you know, when a man wants to do an amazing gesture for his girlfriend and he gets punished. Not only that, punished, but perhaps savagely beaten.
Oh, dear. This escalated very quickly, because up until this, I thought we were talking about that gender reveal video.
It's just not right. I mean, you know, you'd think that the world, the universe, and nature would just say, hey, this is a romantic heart. We've just let this follow through. Let this play out the way that this person intends.
So if I'm sniffing around, I've watched enough weird things to get an idea. Sounds like somebody had good intentions, made a grand gesture to show appreciation for another person, and the world, being cruel, heartless, and full of vitriol, couldn't handle for one brief moment anything shinier than its own corporate greed, and misinterpreted the signal, and everyone's making it a big fuss over what clearly was meant as a charitable and joyful gesture.
And I mean, it was like a sign from, I think, maybe like any which way you can or any which way but loose, kind of very similar to that. So this man's in love with a woman, love his girlfriend, and he wants to give her the best present you possibly can. Like I spent, you know, 1 year with my girlfriend.
Did he get her a monkey?
He tried.
What's wrong with that? You used to be able to mail order monkeys. They came in a cage.
Just want to get her a squirrel monkey. It's all he wanted to do.
Oh, that's the traditional first year anniversary, right? You know, you get your beloved spider monkey.
The squirrel monkey. Remember the ones we hung out with, Justin?
Well, I mean, obviously they had somebody had squirrel monkeys, so it's got to be legal to have squirrel monkeys. Is this a law thing? Did they set him up on a sting? Did they arrest this dude?
You know, you could call it an attractive nuisance, so you could say like, hey, we've got a bunch of monkeys, and you don't even think about coming here to try to get one of these monkeys.
Oh, he tried to steal a monkey?
Can't you steal another living creature? Can't you steal?
That's
a
true. I guess that's true. Yeah, I mean, there is a kidnapping moral philosophy that says that no creature can own another creature.
Want to know what? As we have known on the internet for years and years, information and squirrel monkeys want to be free as they become mine.
So, you know, when this headline starts, a drunk man. Okay, listen. Do you know that he was positively drunk at the? Is he drunk right now? Is he always a drunk man? You get drunk once. Are you labeled drunk man forever?
Yeah, you know what? I'll go a step farther. Even if his blood alcohol content was 0.20, it's subjective how you handle. We all process chemicals differently. Maybe he's totally fine.
Maybe he would have done this sober. We don't know. So a drunk man is feared to have been beaten up by a pack of tiny monkeys after breaking into a zoo to try to catch him.
Beaten up by 10-inch squirrel monkeys.
That's a big squirrel. 10 inches.
For monkeys.
Well, and also monkeys. Beaten. Like, I believe clawed. It's hard for me to picture anything 10 inches large throwing a punch that's going to bruise me.
He's battered. Oh, my God. These are the monkeys that we interact with at Monkey Jungle, right?
Yes. Not the same monkeys, but, you know.
I mean, as far as you know.
Monkeys are the same, Justin.
You know, maybe.
These are in Wellington. These are in New Zealand. So they're.
Sure, but the same yeah. species of monkeys that we came in.
We had an adorable, fun encounter. They climbed all over us and fed from our hands and made us one of their tribe.
Highly recommended if you're ever in the Miami area, go make it out to Monkey Jungle and splurge. You deserve it. Treat yourself. Do the plus plus tour where you get a box of raisins and you feed them amazing raisins.
Because
I would have thought based on our experience, this would have been an amazing time for him. What did he do? I've turned totally against him. Screw you, man in love, drunk man. If you could befoul these delightful creatures, then I think that you are at fault.
Man, how do you think, because there's some level of sentience happening with all these monkeys, at some point they have to go from, oh, it's the people who bring us treats. Oh, wait, he's grabbing Garbrak, and is Garbrak's not happy about this. Hey, put Garbrak down, they all shout one at a time, and then eventually realize, you know what, I don't think this is a nice guy at all. Let's kick his butt.
I think the way they behave, I think from the moment he tried to enter the cage, they were probably just super skittish, super, super skittish. And then when he decided to go for one, apparently some of the monkeys were hurt, had broken legs and stuff and all that. So it's not funny. And this guy got what he deserved, monkey justice.
We don't have a video of this specific incident, but the Sun helpfully provided a dramatic video of monkeys attacking another drunk man at a zoo.
Oh, great. Different monkeys.
Different monkeys.
Drunk man.
An older man. He's like in a moat.
They look like they're trying to help him. Oh, no, not so much helping.
They're not trying to help him.
It looks like he's just reaching out to him in the moat. Oh, and meanwhile, all the other monkeys, aka humans, are just sitting there like real asshats. Just watching.
What are you
supposed to do? I mean, what is this guy doing? He's going the wrong way. Oh, you're going to lose a finger. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Content warning, he does get a little bloody.
Oh my goodness. That is an upset monkey.
So I think he is trying to get up onto the monkey island.
Yeah, he's like in the
boy
moat.
Howdy, did boo, he boo, 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 get boo, boo. A real souvenir for his troubles. Okay.
My goodness. That dude was so drunk he was like, oh, is that my bone?
Is that a lot of my blood?
Who's
a lot of my blood?
Newsflash, don't go to Monkey Island unless you're invited to Monkey Island.
Yeah, he definitely seemed way too comfortable.
Invite only.
Yeah,
he seemed too comfortable in that moat, that filthy, filthy moat.
Yeah.
Well, I think they probably would have been all right with him just splashing around in that disgusting green brackish water. It was just he got a little too close to mainland, and they were like, "Yeah, sorry, we're turning you back."
Yeah. Please don't steal monkeys. You know, it's funny. It's like this sort of the backstory why we were at that monkey jungle was because, remember why?
I think I remember. Does the reason why involve a big name drop?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. No, I remember that.
Or if it's fine to say, David Copperfield was looking to like put monkeys on his island, right? And so, you know, we're friends with David and friends with Chris Kenner, of course, actually. Chris is like, oh, well, you know, I'll get you guys on the tour there. So we get the tour there, the back of Monkey Jungle to go see that, you know, and then it was an awesome experience. But I'm like, David's got to do this. David's got to do this. David's got to have a whole, this is going to be the best thing ever in the world. You know, I may have talked them out of it by my weird enthusiasm afterwards.
Yeah, exactly. No, there was definitely, we were like, oh, thumbs up. You should do it. And Chris is like, we weren't looking for your opinion, but you should do it. You should really do it. Go.
Best thing that ever came out of knowing somebody famous peripherally ever.
Oh, 100%. No, 100%. I think I then took two girlfriends there.
It became part of your grooming.
Listen, if you are single and you live in South Florida, you can always go to a fancy dinner. You can always go to a fancy club. You can always go to the beach. Very rarely you get one shot at overspending a little bit of taking a girl on the backstage tour of Monkey Jungle. And it is a Facebook photo for life.
Yeah. Gentlemen. You know, this is cool. This is a very, very, very cool story, and pushing the boundaries of technology, you know, is one of these things that we are in the 21st century, by the way, in case you forgot. You guys remember the experimental glider, the Perlan, P-E-R-L-A-N?
Solar-powered one that could theoretically just keep on going?
No, just full-on glider, no solar panels, just gets towed to a certain altitude, then it uses air currents to go higher. There's been theories, there's some suggestions on, like, gliders are fascinating, because gliders aren't just something that go up there and they just sort of fall. You get what's called, like, you get, like, these unmanned gliders get super, super fast, like, over mountain ranges. Like, people will take them, fly, they'll get, capture a current up over the mountain, fall back down, go up, and get into the hundreds of miles an hour, like, with unmanned gliders. And so the idea here was they wanted to use one of these gliders and use mountain waves, because the wind goes up the mountain, goes to a high altitude. They're going to send this manned glider, 2 men in it, and they're going to send it up the mountain wave and to try to achieve a very, very high altitude. Now, we're looking at an infographic where they show this sort of pattern, like, over the mountains, and you can see this one point where there's this, like, spinning circle, and that's where, like, they'll use unmanned gliders. I think somewhere like the Sierras, I forget where it is, but, like, there's some spot there where they get, like, these unmanned ones to go stupid fast because they just keep spinning and spinning and spinning in these higher altitudes. But here they used a manned one to go up a mountain current, up the wave, to get set an altitude record for a glider. Now, it started at something like 30,000 feet. You ready for the altitude it reached?
It started at 30,000, which is just...
It was towed it to 40. They towed it to 40,000 feet.
Okay. They towed it to 40,000. So that's already above commercial airliner. Stratosphere is what, like 200,000 or 100,000 or something?
Something like that.
I would be amazed if they got over 80,000 square feet, feet up.
I would be amazed too. They didn't make it that high, Brian.
Okay.
But they made it, they started 40, they made it to 65,000 feet, which they set a new record for glider in one of the highest altitude for a winged aircraft at all. Okay. And which is kind of easy.
Is there really any weather at 65,000 feet?
You still win. It's your atmosphere is much, much thinner, but you're still going to have, you know, you're going to have winds and currents and things like that. But yeah, you're dealing with much less, you know, atmospheric density. You know, you're talking at like 100,000 feet. It's like the atmosphere of Mars. It's like one or, you know, it's 1% or 2% of Earth's atmosphere. So
I would imagine an unmanned craft running on, you know, a fairly, I would imagine, simple AI algorithm. Like, it just seems like we should just cover the entire Earth with these, just constantly up and just floating around, adapting on the fly to whatever breezes are going whichever way to stay up there. Then all of a sudden we have global, insanely fast internet and unbelievable information fidelity.
That was Facebook's plan.
What's that?
That was the Facebook plan.
Right.
But so there are the highest altitude for unmanned, by the way, was the NASA Helios. So that was not a glider, but that was a solar powered, right? So that was what they were able to do with that. Okay. Now, in the case of this, there is the advantage, you say, if you're using these sort of like gliders, or if you're using, in this case, you're not talking about glider, you're talking about actually drones, you know, so like the NASA one, solar powered like that. That's what Facebook wanted to do. Pro and con, pro, it's easy to deploy, you can cover a large area. Con is that, you know, to get really good connectivity, you've got to have a big transmitters, big power sources, things like that. And so just, you need a lot of them, and not just a handful of them, which means you got a lot of these, you got to deploy, you got to put up there. And then we're at this point where satellite technology is getting a lot cheaper. You know, it's this.
It may make sense just to go straight to orbit rather than this intermediate step.
But there might be, you know, there might be cases where it does make sense. You know, an example is, take for example, like space-based solar. It's just the economics of it really doesn't work out when you figure out, like, because people are like, oh, now that we'll put solar panels in space. Well, it's like, okay, you put a bunch of solar panels in space, then you got to take that power and you got to convert it into some sort of beam, a microwave or something.
Which looks an awful lot like a space death ray.
But even forgetting that, just that you've now got this powerful microwave beam you've got to shoot down to Earth, and now you've got to have a big, huge collector for this thing, because it's not like hitting something the size of, you know, a basketball court, and depending upon this, deficiencies, whatever, these things could be very massive collectors, okay? Then, you know, the other thing, too, is people are like, oh, but space-based works at night. Well, it depends. If your solar panel's in low Earth orbit and your collector is fixed on Earth in one spot, you need to have multiple collecting points.
Yeah.
You know, and it gets, but it's the point is it gets more and more complicated. But I'll say the but is, if you're Japan and you don't have room for a bunch of solar panels and stuff and you're looking for alternative, it might make sense there. If you're a forward-based military operation, you know, or if you're somewhere else in some place where you don't have access to a power grid, the ability with solar panels, well, then, yeah, maybe it makes sense. But if you're, you know, if you're in America, you're in China, you're in Canada, your place is like, you have wide fields, you have rooftops and places to put solar panels, then why not just do it there? Cut out the middle.
I mean, also, if you're a forward-facing military deployment, you could always go ahead and use that gigantic death ray.
They're coming over the ridge. What are your coordinates for power? Our coordinates plus, you know, two clicks.
Yeah.
So, not to say that it's not that, you know, but anyhow. This is another item that came up that was very cool. So, the Japanese Space Agency, is... like JASA, whatever that is, they're trying something very cool, and that is they're deploying on a satellite. They're going to do their own test of a robot to go between a tether for their own. Hey, let's see if we could still build a space elevator. And what they want to do is they want to take, you know, two objects, two satellites or two small objects, and with a very long tether, and to see the physics of something going from one point to the other, because it works great on paper and, you know, it's all theoretical. But when you're trying to have something move across a tether effectively in, you know, microgravity, what happens there? And you might get vibrations, might become, you know, we've had things like that before using tethers where vibrations just didn't dissipate and tore things apart. And we had to learn a lot about that by just actually testing this. And I'm not a big, you know, I think that with where we are, you know, reusable rockets, you know, space elevators at this point don't make any sense given all the other problems of the space. Forget the technology. It's, hey, we want to put a 20,000-mile-long tether, you know, above Ecuador with weather and seas, you know, hurricanes. And people are like, well, you can move it. I'm like, yes, we could do these things. There's a lot of things we could do, but we don't even do the simple stuff. So. But I'm all for people wanting to investigate and find out if there's something to it. So
I wonder what the cost savings would have to be for this kind of infrastructure thing. As we discussed, I think we figured out, or you figured out, that the Falcon Heavy, Falcon 9?
VFR.
That it would be roughly the cost of a flight around the world to get to orbit, with everything, if all the equipment was reused and all that. Like, that is such a massive reduction of expense that it makes me wonder how much cheaper a space elevator would have to be for that to make sense, to build the infrastructure to make happen.
Yeah, when you're looking at, let's say, the big Falcon rocket, which is being built now, and you know, SpaceX's, you know, Gwynne Shotwell says next year we think we'll be seeing hopping tests of that. When you're building a rocket that's getting hundreds of uses or 1,000 uses out of this thing, your fuel cost is your primary cost, and it runs on methane. Space elevators, you know, are electric, and so you can say they could be electric, and you can say, hey, effectively your cost is that. You still have a maintenance cost, and you also think per square foot or whatever of this thing. It's just, there's huge amounts of infrastructure. Your infrastructure maintenance alone, like, you know, is it take 20,000 people to maintain a space elevator? You know, and people would say, oh, no, we don't know. But to imagine that the most advanced, sophisticated engineering project in human history is somehow magically going to be less easy, take fewer people to maintain than the BART. Just,
yeah, I mean, that's the one thing I would say is specifically where we are now compared to the theoretical future that we were looking at, you know, 10 years ago. The idea, I think that there was an idea of like, okay, let's take on the idea, the cost to build this, but also we're going to need to maintain it. And if it's broken, it won't work. Right. And we need to understand that we can't really wrap our head around exactly what it costs every time something breaks in a space elevator. We won't know that until we are well into it, right? Any kind of gigantic engineering project like this tends to be more expensive than you would initially think it would be. Whereas now, at least, hey, look, SpaceX rockets have blown up and they launch another rocket and it sucks and it's bad and whatever's lost is lost. And hopefully you don't have any human casualties, but at the end of the day, that's there's another one to take its place. A space elevator having any kind of problem is going to, you know, affect the entire project.
And I'm bearish on the prospects, but totally supportive of, you know, let's continuing research. Let's not shut the door. Let's keep, but we've got this amazing opportunity now with reusables, and that's, you know. Oh, hey, by the way, I don't know if you heard this, but they landed a rocket booster last night. Did you know that? Did you know they're capable of doing that now?
It's not even worthy of mention, even on this show where we're so excited about it.
I follow SpaceX on Twitter, and I was like watching, you know, I was like watching the gender reveal memes and stuff like that. And it's like SpaceX is doing its live tweeting of, you know, everything fairing deployed, boring, scroll. Sure, greatest feat in, you know, space engineering in my lifetime. Whatevs. Bring on the memes.
Have they successfully caught the fairing yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet. It's tricky. So as you know, they're trying to the upper part of this of the first stage, which is the housing, this big composite thing that splits apart to protect the satellite, cost millions of dollars. And so, you know, Elon Musk describes it like, imagine, you know, pallets of cocaine dropping into the ocean. You know, you'd try to recover those. Like, oh, interesting metaphor there. Okay. So that's the point. It's like saying, listen, if we can capture these things, and let's say, you know, the recovery effort costs half the price of it, we've still made it, still saves us $1 million or $2 million a launch. And that attention to efficiencies, we can save 5% here. And big government contracts don't care about that kind of stuff. They don't. But you save 5% here, 5% here, do that a few times, soon you're half the price of your competitors.
No, there's literally no there is no incentive for any gigantic military contractor to talk about how much you'll be saving next year. Imagine all of your prices reduced. No, they don't like that.
Yeah. Gentlemen, I think next week we'll pick up with the new quest for Journey.
Mission quest.
No, it's quest for Journey now. we're trying to find out what happened to it.
So. I read a book. I got a pick.
All right. Oh, Brian read a book.
Oh, this part where we get into a semantic argument where there is some weird faction of people.
Oh, wait, you listened to a book, Brian. Oh, right, it doesn't count. Right. Doesn't count.
You listened to a book.
Take his book choo-choo train off the wall from the book train, because Brian, turned out, did not read the book class.
Like, the people...
I'm banished. Ma, we'll keep you out with our spines that of the books we've read.
Give him a paper cut with the bookmarks he doesn't possess.
We'll throw the book at you, literally, because you didn't read it.
Where do you think that high and mightiness comes from in those people?
It is a relic of just a literary.
I guess all of us remember a time in our life where we were very proud that we had learned to read, and we knew peers who could not read, that we got to lord that over them and feel superior. And I guess there's some version
of that. Did you hear
what
happened to Clifford? What? Oh, sorry. It's in the book, Brian. You'll have to read it.
Man, take it from somebody who has had to read a lot of books that aren't on Audible over the past 6 months. Oh my God, I'll never go back. I never go back to reading. They suck. It sucks, and I fall asleep, and I can't drive. Like, it's the worst.
Well, and plus also your dumb traitor eyes skip ahead, and if there's a big boring paragraph, you just sort of like, yeah, I got it, pretty much, I guess. Whereas, like, audiobooks force you to listen to every word, which especially matters in drier nonfiction books, like my pick for this week, which is by the author Charles C. Mann. And it's called The Wizard and the Prophet. And it is the story of two individuals. One is well-known to us and well-beloved. The other is a new character that I had not met. It's the historical story of, I forget the guy's first name, but Vogt and Borlaug. One the prophet, the guy who wrote the original works, one of the first books that referred to the environment, capital T, capital E, and of course, Norman Borlaug, leader of the Green Revolution and Nobel.
That'll be his name.
That's right. But specifically, he talks about the two different approaches between prophets, in other words, those who forecast the doom coming and say you must repent and take actions to avert doomsday, and wizards who feel like, yeah, no, bring it on. Let's do it. We'll just solve it. Like, we solve everything else. We're wizards. And it did a really good job of moving me from my default position of just assuming the wizards are always right, and instead made me really consider the benefits of the prophet side of things. And it spends a little more time selling the prophet sides, because I think in general, if you're not already on board with the traditional conservation, reduce, reuse, recycle kind of stuff, it does a good job of explaining their position better. I don't know. I felt enlightened. My favorite part is that the book was read by Bronson Pinchot, who apparently has read like a hell of a lot of audiobooks. I just looked at the rest of his category of his catalog. Anyway, it was great. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
That sounds very interesting. Yeah, Norm Borlaug is somebody everybody here who's not familiar with him, you need to know. This guy's saved more lives than just about anybody in history.
Yeah. They also get very biographical, boots on the ground. And I have not read I think it was called his autobiography, but it was ghostwritten. And he does a really good job in the footnotes of explaining, hey, there's a lot we don't know about Norman Borlaug. A lot of this is apocryphal. The best source is this, but we know it's flawed for all these reasons. But for the purposes of this book, this is the closest thing to his actual story since he read it and approved it. It's apparently close enough to what happened that we can quote from it. Just be cool. But hearing his humble upbringings, it's great. It rose my appreciation for Borlaug, and it enlightened me to the perspective of what is the other side, the other tribe of trying to be good stewards of the environment.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
I'm gonna do a repeat pick because I finished the season. Succession on HBO. This is the dramatized series that puts you in the family travails of what is fairly transparently a Murdoch type family of an aging media conglomerate that has this all these family things. I kind of compared it to it's a little bit of a serious Arrested Development, but man. If I can I tempt you guys with a little element that might spice up and tempt you guys to watch the show? Sure. It's not really a spoiler. It's just kind of a thing that happens. So the family set up with Brian Cox as the Rupert Murdoch stand-in, right? Old guard head of this family. Two sons who are involved in the company, and then a daughter. The daughter is involved in politics. And so she is a political advisor that she winds up. The thing I like about the show is that all the stuff that's set up in the first couple episodes, they kind of filter through. You think that a show like this is going to spend all season on it. And there are through lines that kind of go from pillar to post. But by and large, it's always kind of ahead of you and it's wrapping things up faster than you expect and consistently giving these characters new challenges. And you never really know how long they're going to last or whether or not this is going to be the one that takes them to the end. But you assume, at least I did watching it, that you were going to spend the entire time with this character, the political advisor, getting this one lady elected. And then just all of a sudden in the middle of the season, they're like, oh yeah, the election was over. She won. So now she's looking for another job. And she finds what is fairly nakedly a Bernie Sanders stand-in, where now, like, the daughter of this, news corp-y situation now has to, shepherd this Bernie Sanders, who is running on the idea that her family is literally the devil And you, all I'll say is this. There's always these fascinating elements in following politics where you hear these like random asides of like, oh, you know, at a weekend vacation, you know, Hillary Clinton met with Rupert Murdoch and they seem to really like each other. You know, you get a little bit more. This is a dramatized version of situations like that where diametric political opposites now have to have kind of these real politic conversations about how things go. And that backdrop set with, I think, very, very well done family dynamic writing really, really sold me on a show that I was it was way, way for a million reasons, up to and including the fact that it's a Gary Sanchez production, meaning it's Adam McKay and Will Ferrell as the producers. I have not really trusted them with any kind of political or media criticisms for a little bit, based on their personal kind of writings and opinions. This was very, very, very well done. And what you would, I very much enjoyed in a rich possibility for family drama in a situation like that. Well done, well told, and just a superb finale.
Dude, that's awesome.
Bryce?
I have a pick. So over the weekend, or right before the weekend, a new video game came out, and that is Marvel's Spider-Man on PlayStation.
I think it just finished downloading. Like our Wi-Fi was so slow. I haven't played it yet, but I've already bought it.
It's very good. The first question everyone has is the web swinging good? And it's very good. What I really like about it is that it has a sense of flow, not just in the web swinging and not just in the combat, but in pretty much all of the systems of the game. You know, you can kind of hop in and out of like, oh, street crimes. You just kind of hop into it and there's not like a big loading thing in or out of it. There are lots of different little extra missions that you can go and do. And those are fun. And they change them up enough where they feel like you're actually doing something and not just kind of going to the thing and hitting all the whoop bops and boop boos. I think my only criticism of the game is that it's only really good. It's not super surprising. Like, it is what a really good Spider-Man game looks like.
Looks gorgeous.
And yeah, it really is gorgeous. And like, even the few load times that there are, which are when you load into the game or when the game decides, oh, hey, well, this mission that you're doing takes place at night, but you are at the part of the story where it's daytime, so we have to load a different time of day. Like, even those load times are not bad at all. So it's really good looking, and it holds up well in terms of performance. So, you know, I don't tend to like games where it's like, you know, you're given the big map and there are just a million icons everywhere.
It's basically a to-do list, the game.
Right.
It's like, anyway, you're behind on all these emails. Could you just play the mini game where you answer all your emails?
But what's nice about it is it really takes its time to parcel out those different things. So like, from the beginning, it's like, oh, find my old backpacks, and each one has a memento, and you click into it and he tells you a little thing about his backstory, and oh, this is when I fought the rhino and I needed his tusk to figure out what his suit is made out of, and
the spider's dead.
And so it kind of gives you more of those over time, so you have more reason to keep going back and forth throughout the city. But
it's cool.
I think it's really good. So if you have a cool PlayStation, that's
Golden
Marvel's
Age Spider-Man. For Spider-Man, like Into the Spider-Verse looks gorgeous.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it does.
Dude, that is that trailer I've watched maybe 20 times. It's great.
Yeah.
Oh,
it just
One last thing on the Spider-Man game. If you are a Spider-Man fan, there are like a million characters in this. There's it's not like one big bad guy, there's like 10.
So if you're familiar with, you know, with the classic 10 big bad guys.
Mm-hmm. Like, I think the Sinister Six is somewhere on the box art for this.
Is
part of the feature set. So there's a lot of like good, also, okay, I'm gonna tell you this because you're gonna find out immediately. J. Jonah Jameson does not work at the Daily Bugle anymore. Do you guys know, has any of you heard this?
I know.
J. Jonah Jameson does not work at the Daily Bugle anymore. He quit to start his own podcast, which is very much an Alex Jonesian style.
Oh, that's amazing. Tell me it's like in the equivalent of Grand Theft Auto. Uh-huh. You can listen to the podcast as you're doing your other stuff.
Okay, so that's the frustrating thing. It pops up regularly when you're not doing anything, right? Like, oh, okay, here's something you just did. And,
right.
But he's putting his spin on it, and he's getting callers. You're like, actually, Spider-Man's pretty good. And he's like, ah! but you can go into the menu and listen to all of the ones that have played. But it's a bummer because you can only listen in that menu.
Oh, you can't do it like why? Because
They're not long. They're only like a minute or two long. They're
sure, but also drops, like that would be so in character is for Spider-Man to be listening to podcasts as sure. he's looking
about
for a bed.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
I understand why you wouldn't make a full thing out of it because they're very short and you only get them after occasional bits or
right.
unlocking story bits. But I do wish, you know, you could play it and then at least let me get back into it and then stop it when it's done. But that's such a, like a really great character development thing.
That's awesome. And I'll tell you what, you're absolutely right, Andrew, that this is just a golden age of Spider-Man. And for whatever reason, Spider-Man as a property, people have just dialed in. Maybe it's just because they had so many whacks at a movie. And it was just like, okay, God, we don't need to do the same thing. Like, that's literally, we've mined these things. Let's focus on everything else. Like, yeah. You have, he's sad. His uncle died. Great power, great responsibility. He screwed up that one time. Can we now focus on literally everything else?
Yeah, like, this is not an origin story.
Yeah.
This game. It's like, he's been Spider-Man for many years. And there's all sorts of backstory between, like, him and Aunt May, him and MJ, him and what's the guy's name? Ben, or not Ben? His friend, the Oscorp son guy.
Oh, Harry Osborn.
Harry, yeah. Like there's all sorts of backstory there that is not just like the origin story again.
Yeah, and that's what's made Spider-Man such a rich character for so long, and everybody always wants to start at square one when he's always been a fascinating character. And also, I'm so glad that they just threw all the spaghetti at the wall for the villains because he's got the best rogues gallery.
There's a great
it's him and Batman are the only people in really, you know, number one position. And I always like the Spider.
I have one small little last story. Are any of you guys like big on Spider-Man stuff? Like is,
oh yeah.
Do you know Screwball? Is Screwball an existing villain?
Not Screwball. I'm thinking of Speedball. He was a new hero they were trying out in the early 90s or something.
So there's a great side mission where you go up to someone and she's like, oh, thanks for your help for doing the whatever challenge. Here, just open up the camera and take a picture of this QR code. And you find out that that is this villain Screwball, who is a live streamer. Who is like, I've kidnapped someone. And now we're watching you having to go find these QR codes. And at each point, he gets stopped by armed guards, which is a swatting parallel that I couldn't help but make. It's interesting in those little modern times.
So it feels like they've successfully taken a lot of storylines and brought them into the early 21st century.
I think so. I mean, I don't know if it seemed like Screwball was an existing character, but it was also just looked like a woman.
Screwball debuted in 2008.
Oh, okay.
So.
So newer.
Yeah, so she's been around for a decade, which by Spider-Man standards makes her
20 minutes old.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's that. Do you have a pick, Andrew?
I got two picks. One is I've been watching Castle Rock and continue to really enjoy the show. It's been one of my nice surprises of it. It's set, as we mentioned, in the Stephen King universe. So there's characters and things that play and relate to it, but it's its own story. You don't have to know anything about Stephen King's stories to follow through. And I'm digging it, and we've got one more episode this season, and it just kind of went going crazy pants, like you have no idea what's going on. And you know, I signed up for it saying, hey, it's Stephen King, and it may not make any sense at all. Let me just see if I enjoy where it goes, and I'm having a lot of fun, so I'm really enjoying that. And then I have another pick, which is a hardware pick. So I got my new car. And one of the things that I live with and I love all the time is I literally have – I was laughing last night because I'm sitting at dinner and my girlfriend wouldn't know what time it was. And I just go, Alexa, what time is it? And she's going to tell me right now. But I'm sitting there and I hear this small voice go, the time is, you know, 8:46 p.m. And I'm like, where is that coming from? Because I thought,
sorry, I don't know that one.
It's okay. It's all right. You don't win every one. I thought maybe it might be the Alexa that was over here. I thought, and but like I actually had, you know, one of those Fire tablets that was closed that I'd charged and set on the side, you know, of the counter and forgotten about for like a week or two, but I turned it on and that heard me. And it's like, oh, I can help you. I can help you with it. So I have these all around me, but my car, I don't have them. I don't have it. And I like using her because for my audiobooks, because that's my favorite thing to do is I can pick up where I left off and I can just say, hey, set my sleep timer for 8 minutes, play my audiobook. She'll play it for 8 minutes, then stop. I do that every night when I go to sleep. But when I drive, I like to drive and listen to audiobooks. So I got for my car, and I mean, you can pull out your phone, you can do that. But I'm like, if anybody drives me, you know, Andrew does not take his phone out of his pocket because it's not going to be a distracted driver. So I got for my car the, it is the Jarman Speak Plus. And I was hesitant because it had like 3 out of 5 stars on Amazon. Everybody loved it. But it's got it's a dash cam. It's a little dash cam, but it's got her built into it. It's got the little blue ring and all that with it. So you can get it on Amazon for like $190 or whatever, free shipping. They have just the Speak, which the Holy regular cow. Speak also has
does it get internet connectivity through your phone, like through Bluetooth?
Yep.
Oh,
so you can get one for $80. The one that's $180, whatever, has a built-in dash cam. So I got that one.
This has like a little, like this one's got like lane navigation information on this.
Yeah, it'll do navigation. It'll do that. It'll tell you if like they think it's a car in your lane. I'm driving a Tesla, so it's not really that helpful compared to that. You know, it's not, but it has a lot of cool features in it. But it's got a dash cam and stuff built in there. So if you're looking for an accessory that adds a lot of stuff to your car, you know, I've got it, and I just use it for, you know, the Alexa purposes, and very, very happy with it. Now I just get in, I switch my car, all I have to do is switch my car over to use to connect to my phone through the, you know, for the music part, the stereo system, and it's ready and willing. So
that's awesome.
That's my pick. You know, again, if you want to put that in your car and you have it, and just once it automatically turns on with my car, I don't have to touch anything else, and I've got the full on capabilities there.
Awesome, nice,
gentlemen. It's been weird.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.